Hi, and welcome to Faith Points, a weekly podcast from Faith Point United Methodist Church. If you'd like to join us for worship on Sunday morning, or just want some more info, visit us on the web at faithpointum.org, or you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/faithpointum, or you can find us on Facebook. And now, a weekly message from Pastor Chris Bishop.
A few weeks ago, there was a guy that came into my wife's office. She's also a pastor, and he opened with this, and he said, "I'm not a bad guy, but this is the way that it's going to have to be until the city tells me to do something differently." So that right there, that's a pretty good opening, right? To make sure that the communication lines are absolutely open. And what he was talking about was that there's a house, clearly, that's near her church, and there's this back kind of courtyard, alley, parking lot area that gets not only to back access for folks that have a little bit harder time walking upstairs and things like that for her church, but also to get to some of the local Brunswick businesses. And these new renters or new owners of this house don't like people driving in the alley to get to the place, okay? Now, there's another little spot up here, like kind of if you were to turn right, but it's really difficult in getting to it. And so he said, "So I'm going to park my car right here because we don't like the way people drive through the alley. And so until the city tells me differently, that's where I'm going to park." And he said, "I am happy and willing to have a conversation with you about it, though, but this is the way it is." And then he went on to say, "Well, it's not really that big of a deal. You know, it's not really that big of a deal. But from the moment that this picture was taken," now I then went on a run, and so about 40 minutes later or so, I noticed that the cars were completely in a different configuration. And so they had clearly moved the cars not once but twice in that 40 minutes. So if it's not that big of a deal, what? Right? Something doesn't add up. And I don't know. I'm a people watcher. That's why I go to baseball games. My wife goes to do the box score thing. I go just to watch people. And so it's like watching this drama unfold. It's not that big of a deal, but we're going to move all of our cars in this way to make it clear that no one's to come through this alley that's kind of public access. I don't think that this was the best approach, maybe, to do this, to start the conversations after you have made the decree, because this has clearly done harm to some of, not just the church, but the kind of, you know, the morale or the relationship that then they have with some of the other local businesses in town. And so there's some kind of ongoing conversation about that. But today, as we start a new series, I'm thinking about this and thinking about the little book that we have to kind of guide us as we talk about this series that we're entitling Recalibrate. These three general rules or these three kind of ways in which we can recenter our lives so that sometimes our actions and words can line up a little bit more. Because for this guy, his words may have said this isn't a big deal and that it's that we can have conversation, but the actions didn't match it. And so today we're gonna explore the first of these three general rules that were kind of handed down to United Methodist congregations by their founder, John Wesley, who was nothing but a practical theologian. Some of the things that he believes, maybe, or if you read, you're kind of like, well, theologically in my mind, this might, but man, he was such a practical guy. He was one of those guys, or he said, you know, there's no holiness except from social holiness, that everything that we do then has ramifications for those who are around us. And so today, our first general rule is to do no harm. And this is an important one, but it's often overlooked, I think. But the first step to building community and relationship is this idea that we have this deep call to do no harm. But when we mess that up or when we forget that, some things kind of happen pretty quickly. And so this is our first rule that builds the foundation on where we're to go as people of God, as people who are going to respect one another and to kind of build that foundation of where we go. And so when we agree that we're going to do no harm, This is in that book. Reuben Job writes this. So when we agree that we will do no harm to those whom we disagree, conversation, dialogue, and discovery and new insights become possible. When our words and actions are guarded by this first simple rule, we have time and space to think about the consequences before the word is spoken and action is taken. I think that's pretty good, right? For just three little words, do no harm. What it does is it creates space where we can be heard and where we can hear others. It disarms us to say that when we come in, it may take the form of a coffee table where just across from us, it's that safe space that says, we disagree, or I know that we have different viewpoints on X, Y, and Z. But in this space, when I commit to do no harm, I know that we can have open and honest conversation and that I am heard and I will hear you in a way that we can leave from this place knowing that we could come back again and maybe have this same thing again and have some kind of understanding. Isn't that pretty good? Like, doesn't that seem like it's a substantial thing. That's why we're saying that it's the thing that's going to lay the foundation, right? That this is something that is going to happen that is part of a bigger picture, that when we come together and make an effort to do no harm, then we're able to be open to what in the world other people are trying to say. And now for us as a United Methodist congregation, We're gonna pause here for a minute and say, why does this matter in the bigger scheme of things? And for us as a United Methodist congregation, one of the larger things that we're doing and one of the larger conversations that we're having on not just a regional or a national, but an international front as the people called Methodists, is that we're trying to figure out what this whole human sexuality thing is about. We're calling it the way forward. And so what we realize is that maybe my perspective, and I get that there's a few on how we deal with faith and human sexuality, right? There's probably, if there's, five people in a room, there's probably 26 different opinions on the matter, right? And so what we do is we look and we say that this conversation is bigger than just me as the individual who has their own opinions of this, but of you who is also of sacred worth, who, also of the people who are United Methodist in Africa and in Europe and all over the place. And so part of the conversation that we're having here is really part of another global or larger conversation that we're going to have soon. But how does Faith Point deal with this? How does Faith Point kind of find our voice in the midst of this larger conversation? And how do we as Methodists do this too? And so that's going to be some really, I think, really healthy and good conversation that's going to come up in the next few months or so for us as a congregation. But if we adhere to these three general rules, I think that it can be not just a place where we're going to, we've seen what like clawing each other's eyes out looks like, haven't we, in the past season or so, whether it be on Twitter or on other social media or other places. We know what bad communication looks like, right? But I think that these three rules then, and why this one lays the foundation, is so critical, because then it allows us to grow past some of those stumbling blocks, some of those hurdles, some of those challenges, to see who God has created us to be. But oftentimes, this step isn't taken, and maybe for a myriad of reasons, but I think the first and foremost is that people don't take this step because of trust, that this demands trust in God's presence and power and wisdom and guidance and obedience, and we just don't want to give that up. Maybe we've been hurt in the past, maybe something has happened, or maybe it's just too costly, but there is this trust that we have that says God probably has a bigger view of the world and better understanding than I do, and so I'm not going to take this do no harm thing seriously because I kind of want to be in control and I don't want to relinquish that to someone else. Maybe another reason why others don't take this into consideration or step into this do no harm wholeheartedly is because we bound ourselves to certain ideologies or certain perspectives of ways of life that we just can't give up. And so, that I can't fully say that I'm going to do no harm because doing no harm over here means that I have to change the way that I speak about other people, that I don't gossip, that I don't share rumors. Maybe it means the way that it makes it different that I have to spend my funds differently, that I have to look at the ethical resources or the ethical means by which my clothes are made because I know that there are ties there. And so maybe I'm not willing to give that up. Maybe the cost to me to do no harm is more than I want to have. And finally, maybe it's just that we're afraid that this might what this might lead us to, or the ways that we have to change our lives and understanding of the world. There's a wonderful saying about sacred cows make the best hamburgers, right? But oftentimes we're just not willing to make those sacrifices. That if we can find those places in our lives where we say, you know, I mean, probably 80% of us could say, I know that I need to get rid of this in my life because it is either doing harm to others or doing harm to myself. But I just can't, because I feel like if I excise that piece of my life, there's not going to be anything left. I'm so worried about what that's going to be. When the reality is that when we excise that piece of who we are and whose we are, because it's unhealthy, because it's a sickness, because it's destroying our lives, when we do that, we realize that pretty quickly, life and vitality can start to creep back in. And so when we start to, you know, start to realize the cost of not following these rules, what happens is what I think kind of I call spiritual erosion happens. And so behind me there's a time lapse. We just went on a cruise in Alaska, and so I just sat on our balcony when we were going into Glacier Bay National Park, just did a little time lapse. And as you can see, there's a fantastic glacier. And and what happened was, is that when you're there, when you're in these national parks, in this place that has been so fully protected by this kind of do no harm mentality, you look and you say, this is unreal. This looks like something that you would see in, you know, like a Lord of the Rings type of film set, right? That's everywhere we went. And part of it was because while we were on the boat, they weren't allowed to use any kind of disposable paper goods, plastic goods, anything like that. Because part of the way that they take care of the park is that none of that stuff that could pollute could be used until we were out of the park. How cool is that? And there was a couple of people that were super grouchy about it because they didn't have a lid for their coffee. And I'm like, but look, like literally turn your head and see the cost of what you, right, Joel, you're like, this is why we're doing it. Right? But that spiritual erosion, what happens is that we have this gradual thing of doing no harm, but we're trying to do no harm, but maybe we could slip in this way or that way, or use the whatever as you guys sip on your disposable cups and things like that today. But like, there is beauty here. And what happens is that we are shaken out of this spiritual apathy when we see something this pristine in that spiritual context and go, oh, and that guy's name was Jesus, just pro tip, okay? And we say, this is what it looks like to live a life that there is no harm done. I want a little bit more of that. Look at this. Who doesn't want to go there, right? Oh, man. And the seagulls about pecking the camera's lens out. But who doesn't want more of that? And so the cost of not doing this first step, of taking the time to laying the foundation, means that we end up with literal islands of trash in our oceans, right? Or we end up with this spiritual decay and buildup where we can't remember what it feels like to sit down across from somebody without guessing what their ulterior motives are. But yet when we take the time to do that hard work, that's my favorite part right there. Isn't that amazing? Right? Of saying, I'm going to do no harm, we can work on this. And so the good news, though, is that restoration can happen, because like we say here at Faith Point, the worst thing is never the last thing. And so we can be people who bring about restoration in our lives if we don't miss those opportunities. Now, this week, I had a chance I missed an opportunity that I remember. I'm sure there were more, but I also was able to claim an opportunity yesterday. And so the first opportunity that I missed was this week in social media. One of my friends posted about this video that was pretty kind of unnerving. It was by a comedian, but it just there were some things that kind of rubbed us the wrong way. But instead of kind of taking her side and saying, actually, yeah, this video is pretty offensive. It's not just like, haha, it's funny. No, no, no. Like, when you make a comment that one race, they all look the same, that's not a cool thing, right? When there are disparaging comments about the way that the women are portrayed there, that's not a cool thing. And so I had shut my computer down, I guess, and then it just was nagging. It was one of those things that just is nagging at you, and it didn't get a chance to find the post again. I missed the opportunity to speak life and no harm there. So I messaged her, and I just said, your comments were spot on. I'm sorry that they weren't better heard because other people had different motives. Now, yesterday, I think I got it. Because my girls, for some reason, decided that they were going to clean the bathroom, like the main bathroom that's, you know, and they're like, hey, Dad, we're going to clean the bathroom. And I was like, all right. And we've been doing it for 10 minutes. And I was like, okay, let's go check that progress, right? Because it's taken me about 10 years or so. Our oldest is about to turn 11. It's taken me about 10 years to get to that point, not just to say, okay, but let's see how we're doing so far. Let's just get a little checkup. And I went in. And I was speechless because they were working hard. Like, you could tell there was sweat equity happening there, that there were maybe 8,000 paper towels and other, like, cleaning wipes and apparatus just all over the place. And I was like, I can tell you are doing good work because I have to preach on this tomorrow, right? And so you guys are doing great work. And in my mind, I'm thinking, this is a disaster. And so we paused and we said, I want to make sure that your work is honoring the whole family. I realize that you are working really hard. Let's talk about the three things that might make this the best use of our time. And so I said, so step back and let's talk. And so we had this little conversation in a way that then when Mom came home, her first reaction wasn't, wow, something happened in the bathroom, right? But it was, who cleaned the bathroom? This looks great. Because I wasn't willing on letting them just kind of do their thing, but to say, pause for a minute, and let's see how we can all be successful here. Because their graciousness and gratitude about for whatever, I think it was that they were cleaning their tea sets, and they realized midway through cleaning their tea sets that they had made a fairly large mess, and so they were then going to pivot and say, we're going to clean the bathroom, right? And so great, they're doing no harm. But then let's make that a space of shared space and commonality. So a couple of things that I learned is that each and every one of us is part of God's creation, right? And so when we commit to doing no harm, we acknowledge that the other people that we are encountering and engaging are also of sacred worth, and that they are also part of God's creation, and that when we stop to try to intentionally do no harm, we are acknowledging their personal worth as well as the worth of the created world around us, making sure that this whole first rule is all about acknowledging God's creative work throughout the world and honoring and keeping that sacred. So before we go, I want to give you three practical things that we can do to make sure that we're going to be able to do that this week. Does that sound good? Okay. So the first one is that we need to acknowledge the worth of others. And so I want you to turn to a neighbor. Okay. We're going to do one of these turn to a neighbor things because I think it's important today. Turn to a neighbor and say this. We can disagree but still be friends. Oh, wow. All right, hold on. I should have clarified. Let's try that one more time, but if your spouse is here, you cannot turn to your spouse, because apparently there were a lot of finger pointing, right? There we go. Beautiful. And then the second thing, this you could say to your spouse, so turn to somebody else and say, we are different, but that makes life better. There we go, right? So the first thing that we do when we are doing no harm is that we have to acknowledge that worth of other people, even if we disagree with them. Secondly, what I learned yesterday, which I should have learned years and years ago, okay, is ask questions to understand. And so what that means is that before starting, we ask questions. So before parking our car in the middle of the alley, we ask questions before we just do it. And then if we come into a situation where others have the potential to maybe do harm, even though their intentions are good, I think about this. I think about short-term mission trips all the time, that we go in and we save the day with our white capes for 5 days, and then we leave and nothing has changed, or that we've done more harm than good. And so in those situations, we pause, we ask clarifying questions, not so that we seek understanding, but so that others can seek that there is a bigger picture at play, okay? And then the final thing that we do, so we acknowledge the worth of others, we ask questions to understand, and then finally we act. We act without doing harm. This could be in speaking up or speaking out. This could mean that we do something, but none of it matters if we keep all the knowledge and understanding up here and then don't live that word out. So to do no harm means that we'll be on guard so that our actions and even our silence will not injure another of God's children in any part of God's creation. Is that something we can try this week? That you can report back and you can say, man, that was way harder than it was. And what happens is that sometimes we get this kind of, I don't know what to do now. We do our best, right? And hoping that tomorrow we can do a little bit better because of the grace that we encounter through Jesus. So let's close our time together with a prayer. We have one that's gonna show up on the screen here.